Hi, everybody. I'm Joe Tessitore.
And I'm Rob Riggle. And yes, this is literally a mini golf competition. And yes, it's on prime time with an absurd budget.
But that's great because the world needs more mini golf.
And ABC said, why not?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 257 for the week of June 24th, 2019. I am windmill rotation specialist David T. Cole, and I'm here with 19th hole Sarah D. Bunting.
Just sleeve the bottle.
Aging tryhard Tara Ariano.
I'm a professional comic book collector and I'm 38.
And underwhelming celebrity cameo Daniel McEachern.
Who was that guy?
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Before we get into it, two pieces of podcast business. Piece number one, we're off next week to celebrate Independence Day here in America, even though some of us are Canadians. It's always a good idea to eat hot dogs and hamburgers so you don't give yourself away. Number two, our Patreon. Our Patreon is now over our fourth goal. Thank you very much to all our supporters. After Independence Day, we will be sending you a bonus episode pretty much every week. So look at patreon.com/extrahotgreat for details on that. And don't forget, that also means more listener gain times over the summer and fall too.
Yeah.
Yay. Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it. We also appreciate our guest this week. It's Danny McEachern. Hello.
Danny.
Hey, everybody.
Yay!
Thanks for having me back.
Danny has joined us to talk about Holy Moly, which is the mini golf meets Wipeout primetime show. I really can't do a better job of introducing it than the clip that Dave played up top. Neither can Steph Curry, but we'll get into it. It really is this like sort of surprisingly charming, at least it was surprising to me, charming like mini golf course where it's also an obstacle course and there's a lot of slapstick and golf jokes. The hosts are extremely appealing, not least to each other, which I'd find amusing. Danny, what did you think of this obvious Hall of Fame entry into ABC summer programming?
Well, I first became aware of the show during the NBA Finals, also starring Steph Curry. The first commercial that I saw for this show informed us that Steph Curry is the executive producer, which is good news because obviously he's one of the greatest NBA shooters of all time. You know he's going to produce a quality show. The next commercial I saw informed us that this is the, quote, most extreme miniature golf course ever. So if you're like me, I'm sure you immediately began running down all the extreme miniature golf courses you could think of.
Yes.
And then started saying, well, surely it's not more extreme than that golf course.
Remember Vlad the Impaler's mini golf course? That was quite something.
So many deaths. Yeah. So, and then I realized this was probably going to scratch the Wipeout itch that I've been missing. I'm sure a lot of people have been missing since I think society collectively got sick of Wipeout however many years ago before it went off the air, burned bright, but not too long, and then was gone. And so I would have given this a try even if you folks hadn't called and asked me to talk about it. So we watched it, and it is mini golf meets Wipeout. But I think at least for the first episode, I felt that if, you know, they were setting the sliders on the settings for this show in terms of what percentage was going to be mini golf and what percentage was Wipeout, I think they need to move the Wipeout slider up a little bit.
Hard disagree.
Okay.
What?
Tara.
And Steph Curry, as a host, he's an excellent basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
He's unconvincing as himself. But I felt that kind of added to the charm of it a little bit. See, I found that once any obstacle on the course was overcome, then the players were just left putting. And if you're just putting, then that's just real golf.
I do definitely have notes about like the format, but I'll let Dave explain why he doesn't think it's Wipeout-y, or he thinks it's too Wipeout-y.
I'm fine with people hurting themselves. And in this show, like the first person hurting themselves, they're not going to top it all season because it's one of those moments where they hurt themselves twice.
in the same way within like a minute. So it is absolutely fantastic. If you've watched the show, it's the first set of golfers, the lady trying to get through, physically trying to pass through a windmill. You know, the ball has to go through a tiny one. The person has to go through 10-foot windmill, and she just gets clobbered twice.
Oh my God. She just got yard sailed twice.
She broke off part of the windmill.
Yeah.
I was saying to Tara, like, it seems like that could have actually done some damage long term. Like, I realize all this stuff is foam covered and they do what they can to mitigate injury, but she flew off that platform into the fake tulip grounds below. She's probably going to go home with some like pretty good roller derby-esque bruises on her thighs. I am all for that. Like, I find people getting hurt funny. You know, who among us has not laughed at man gets hit with football in the groin type of stuff in the past, whether it be America's Funniest Videos or, you know, Wipeout One or whatever. But for me, now granted, this is for me, and I will acknowledge I am definitely going to be in the minority with this. I want more mini putt. I grew up loving mini putt, being starved for mini putt content in my life, both in person and on TV, because there was like one really crappy mini putt near where I grew up. And I was a child of the 70s and early 80s. So in this time, to sort of put it in historical perspective, we're talking like the Bowling for Dollars era. Like, while Bowling for Dollars was picking up, there was also this movement on TV where they would start televising mini putt matches. And there was like some semblance of like a league for mini putt. I know in the States they had Putt Putt, which is an actual brand name, I think, back in the day of mini putt courses, that would occasionally have specials on ABC. In the afternoon, you know, it would be like PBA bowling. And then once every couple months, if you're really lucky, you would catch an hour, a complete hour of people just doing mini putt. In Canada, I was so starved. I was so happy when mini putt content came on. I would watch this Quebecois show. It was totally in French. I didn't understand what they're saying, but it was like an hour of mini putt every week. And it was all in French. It all was like in Montreal or something like that. But I would watch it every week. And so I remember this having, you know, revisited this whole forgotten past via Holy Moly. And I tracked it down online and it exists. It's called it's Le Hour de Mini Putt.
Formidable.
The universal language of mini putt.
And I remember this guy. There was a guy who was like the star of this Quebec mini putt show. His name was Carl Camoni. And they called him the Mozart of mini putt. And just for shits and giggles, I clipped this. This is a piece of a show. And you are not going to get this narration, this color commentary, anywhere outside of South American football.
La bagarre, c'est un coup et la distance. Carl Carmoni. Birdie! Birdie pour Carmoni! Absolument incroyable.
It's birdie, not it's not Wazo.
That is a long way of saying I love watching mini putt. I love the geometry of it. I love when people are just playing mini putt, but obviously think they're hot shit. You know, like they're the big fish in a very small pond. And there's definitely a lot of that in mini putt. It's sort of like rent-a-cop to cop is mini putt to golfers. So they just got this weird complex. And it is a lot of fun to watch. And while I enjoy people hurting themselves, I've seen it before. And I was really intrigued by how crazy and sort of roller coaster engineered a lot of these holes were. So I wanted to see more of that. Although I do agree that the combination of the two was compelling. I thought the mix for me, I could have used more mini golf. One more note on the mini golf, though. It's funny to see the feedback loop between sports and video games. Back in the day when like Madden football started coming out, you know, there were a lot of technological constraints on stuff. So the view of the football field was sort of this God's eye view over the whole play. And then eventually, because so many people grew up with playing video games and football, the football presentation on TV started to ape the way video games did it, you know, and now they got like cameras on you know, wires and stuff to emulate that sort of view. The same thing happened with mini golf, apparently. Golf video games, everything from Lynx to Tiger Woods and, you know, just shitty iPhone games that you would play, they would do a checkerboard pattern on the green so that you can see the topography of the green without actually being there to experience in all three real dimensions. And here on this show, that's what they do. They do a checkerboard pattern so you can see the, you know, the hills and dips and valleys and troughs of the green. I thought it was interesting to see that feedback loop in action.
Oh my God. Well, I have a question that I will come back to, but I do have format improvements, and they are related to starting with poor Julia spectacularly eating shit right out of the gate. The problem is, so we start with six matchups of golfers, and then the winners of those matches get winnowed down, and then eventually you're down to the three that go to the finals, right? But of the six matchups, we only actually see four, and then we get the results reported on the other two, which means to me, either you need more holes or fewer golfers.
Or you just need less time spent on, like, I enjoy playing with my son. Nobody cares.
Yeah, don't care. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it means that either there were holes that we didn't see or else one or more of the holes that we did see got repeated. So I don't know if they only built four spectacular, you know, first round holes and that's all they did, which, I mean, fine. But it just seems like then start with four matchups. Like, I don't know why they had so many. But then the other problem with Julia, which obviously they put her up top for a reason, if there isn't going to be that kind of physical pain potentially inflicted on everyone at every hole, you got to step it up. Like, you can't start at that level and then come down, which is how the pace of this episode went. Like, after the one where she got knocked the fuck out by the windmill, then the one after that, it was like a slippery hill that you had to sort of like try to run up, even though it was like covered in lube or something. And which also was funny when they slid down, but they didn't look like they were getting as badly hurt. So the one after that, there was no potential for hurting yourself at all. I just feel like the pacing of this, it was weird. It started at a high and then it just sort of declined from there.
In addition to that, on the pain stuff, the pain has to be meaningful to the game because, you know, in the one where they had to climb a sort of fake glacier to grab onto a rope, and the first one up to the top of this glacier mountain got the better putting position for the rest of the hole. In the one with the windmill, there was no penalty for her getting smacked off.
I don't know, because when they cut to the putts by the hole, the other guy had one stroke and she had four.
Oh, did she? Oh, so there was a penalty for falling off. I would like to rescind my golfing problem with that part of the show.
Your golf voice is excellent, though, Dave. Well done.
If there is a stroke penalty for falling off, I will agree. Thank you very much. Okay, back to turn.
So Sarah comes from a family of actual golfers. Sarah, what was your take on the show?
Well, I mean, I liked it, like I said, but your critiques are right on. I don't necessarily need to up the pain factor, but the pacing was a problem. I am accustomed enough to Steph Curry being a monotone, even in spots he's getting paid much more for by his sponsors, that I find that kind of charming. Like, it's like he acknowledges that he sucks at line readings and he's just not going to even try because nothing works. And it's just such a pleasure to see him not chewing on his mouth guard that I'm fine with it.
Very much agree.
I thought he and the Canadian guy Nash were the same person up until last week.
Aww,
Steve Nash. Yeah.
No. But yeah, I mean, this is a show, in my notes I put, like, I probably don't need to watch any more of this, but it's also one of those shows, like, you know, the summertime in my family, like, that's when almost everyone's birthday is, and my brother and his family have a pool, and so there are, like, a lot of family events where, you know, people who are more or less mobile, like, you need to have something that's on in mm-hmm. the background that mm-hmm. will be at least a little bit appealing to half pay attention to everyone. And this is perfect for that. My niece and nephew will love it. My parents will love it. I enjoy it. I also enjoy the interplay between the hosts. Like, I get the feeling Tessitore didn't necessarily know who Riggle is or what he does. Like,
you think? I thought he probably knew.
I mean, of course,
he's been in beer commercials and stuff.
I mean, he must. But like, there were some sincere. Like, occasionally, he would just look over and be like, "Wow, that was really funny." Like, do you not know what everyone's doing here? Like, did you just arrive? But I liked it. I thought it was very charming, but also it's one of those like America's Funniest Home Videos things where it's like, I'm not going to seek that out or set the DVR for it, but if it's on, I am content. And I also felt like this entire podcast was very seen when the distractor was Kenny G, who like talk about having a great sense of humor about yourself and your entire brand, that he's like, you want infernal tootling? I have brought the infernal tootling. So bless his curly haired heart. And that might have been my favorite moment, was the one player being like, who even is that? That was my second favorite moment. My lead moment was that I guess the lumberjack player missing his shot and saying with extremely good enunciation, fart, which was just good. It's good. It's good TV.
I enjoyed this quite a bit and I will keep watching, but I suspect the moment where I don't want to watch anymore is when I see all the holes. And that's why they didn't show them all, because they have like 7 holes, or they built 9 holes, and they have to sort of space it out over at least 3 episodes.
You know what someone should do for Dave, but also I would totally watch this. You know, like dog sitter cam, like at the doggy daycare, they have the camera. Mm-hmm. They should set up CCTV cameras on putt-putt courses.
Yeah.
And then you can just kind of tune in anytime and critique people. I would actually pay for that. Not much, but I would pay.
I'd be into that. The problem is with all the other mini-putts, and where Holy Moly sort of goes a level up, is all the mini-putt shows I was talking about from the 70s and 80s, they were all like non-novelty mini putt courses, right? They were just like geometry puzzles with blocks and angles you had to hit and stuff like that. Like, none of them were, you know, shoot the ball between the windmill or Abraham Lincoln's legs or whatever the heck was happening. They were all you know, there was no tubes that went to lower levels. There was no mousetrap, you know, sort of stuff into it. So to see those kind of holes is fun to me, and I would like to see more. But obviously, you can see in the overhead shots of the stadium, there's like 9 holes maximum. So we're going to see it all soon enough.
What do we make of the extremely noticeable split between the try-hard dingus guy golfers in this first game and the very serious Tracy Flickish female golfers?
I never wanted to punch somebody more in my life than I wanted to punch the unicorn onesie guy. He was so punchable.
He had eye black on. I couldn't totally commit to wanting to punch him because of that, but yeah.
It was just an observation. There was one female golfer in banana pants, Mariama, and she got to the finals. I was definitely rooting for her, but she also was like that was as far as her gimmick got. She wasn't coming out dressed as a full lumberjack or like, you know, Mormon Evel Knievel or whatever the hell. Like, every guy had a bit that they were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just annoying.
Could have been a producer's thing, you know, like, you know, I'm sure they encouraged them to brand themselves in some way.
Well, and one of them, like her boyfriend got the bit. Which is like, just let her do it.
Yeah.
Because this is a women aren't funny thing? Because, come on.
Oh, we talked about the person that eventually won the first episode because she was a little crazy. Like,
she was intense.
There was something else going on. I know she kept on saying she would play mini golf with her grandpa. Like, did grandpa die earlier that day? Because she was really into what was going on.
Yeah.
And really nervous and on the verge of tears for the whole production. Like, I was like, lady, you're making me nervous.
She was one of the ones, there were two of them, I think it was the mountain one, they had to climb up the glacier, and the other one said, should we shake hands or something before we go? And she's like, no.
Yeah.
You're a treat.
Well, I think we've covered it. It's enjoyable TV. It's not appointment TV, but it's extremely well made. Have it on TV. This is what you have a network for, I feel like.
This is also what you have summer for.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Beep, bop, bop, boop. It is time for Around the Dial, our first stop, Tara Ariano. What do you got, Tara?
Well, from I'm 100% going to watch this again, to I'm 100% never going to watch this again. Watch the first episode of the HBO British import miniseries called Years and Years. So when we started out, Vivian Rook, who's played by Emma Thompson, is like a populist. She's an entrepreneur, but she's on some kind of news roundup show. She eventually, you know, gets a political career, but she exists in a universe that already contains Donald Trump. Like, this is at the start of the show happening in our timeline now. And the way she gets on the map is she's on this news, this like Question Time show, and says, when she's asked about Israel and Palestine, like, she doesn't give a fuck about Israel and Palestine. And so people are like, ooh, she's so plain spoken. And then she ends up getting booked on more shows. And this is like her springboard to being a real politician. But like, I guess to represent the ignorant and or racist for these news producers. But the problem with trying to reproduce or interrogate Trump in a fictional setting is that, like, why bother? Why have the stand-in for him? Like, he's not complicated or interesting. And in future episodes, apparently members of the Lyons family that are at the center of this story start getting really won over by her rhetoric. And I just wonder, it's getting very good reviews, not across the board, but it's getting a lot of very good reviews. And I don't get who is still here in a post-Brexit vote Britain or a post-Trump America, like, for empathetic investigations into what makes people like vote their fears. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get the appeal of this, or that, you know, I don't think this necessarily needs to keep happening, you know, from a we have to understand them perspective. But anyway, while I was looking up what the premiere date for this show was, I saw a piece that described it as the ultimate tick the boxes BBC show, and it so is. Mm. There's also a super cringy plot line in which a teenage girl, her parents think that she's trans because they're spying on her internet use, and then it turns out that she's transhuman, and she wants to, like...
What? She wants to sand juniper herself.
Yeah, she wants to become pure digital and, like...
Okay, so yeah. What you haven't explained, Tara, which I think was my problem with it, is speaking about checklists. This is like a checklist of what's going to happen in the next 30 years for humanity. Everything from, you know, migration issues to climate change to transhumanism. Like, it just spends like 30 seconds on one thing, moves to the other. Grade school as futurist essay.
Yes, I forgot to say that. Dave is right. It jumps from our time to the end of the Trump administration over the course of the first episode. And there's, you know, signifiers of like what's happening. It also kills the queen in the course of this. So, like, good luck, Elizabeth.
And Trump fires a nuke on China. Like, it is basically the 2019 Threads. You know, like, everything that could go wrong with the world is about to go wrong. Let's see how it's all going to play out, even though it's, you know, just so fanciful and ungrounded. I don't understand how it's getting good reviews at all. It was terrible.
I don't either. It's from Russell T. Davies, who, like, you either love him or hate him. And yeah, it's real clumsy and real dumb. don't watch it. It's bad. For my plug, since I don't have anything new to plug, I also this weekend watched the next two episodes of Pose, one of which will have just aired by the time you listen to this, and the other is going to be airing on July 9th. They're taking the week off for the holiday. The next two episodes of this season are very good and very special, and if you've been on the fence about watching the show, no one here meets that criteria. I swear to God, Sarah, we're not just trying to browbeat you into watching it, but they're the next two... Episode 3 and 4 of the season are really good. So, yeah, check them out.
Damn.
Okay, since this is the first Extra Hot podcast of official summer, I thought about what I would be watching for the next couple of months. And as it happens, they're all set in Los Angeles because nothing says summer more to me than California. Nothing says more California than Los Angeles. So I'm just going to run through three shows that I'm going to be watching. Either I'm returning to... No, I'm returning to all of them. These are all shows that I've watched at least a season of before. So first, I just started the third season of Lethal Weapon.
Oh, you're the one.
Yeah. Well, this one, it's Clayne Crawford free now, right? And I'm going to finish out the series run. The third season, I think it's only a dozen episodes or so. And I've had a lingering affection for Sean William Scott ever since he starred in the movie Goon, which I know it's not a television show, but I do recommend everybody check that out too.
It's very good.
Yes.
Tis.
Now, second is another show. You know, sometimes when shows build up on your DVR, you reassess and think, you know, am I really interested in this show? Do I really want to continue watching it? And for me, some of them I just wind up deleting and I never watch. Animal Kingdom is an exception to that one for me. I build that up because when I start that one, I like to watch it all the way through, watch a couple of episodes at a time and get through it in a short time span. I like the setting. I like the characters. I'm actually a little bit behind on it. Because the fourth season just started, but I haven't started the third season yet. So I've got about a season and a half, I think, right now on my DVR. So I'm really looking forward to starting that. And then finally, and probably the most important one of all, is I just started season two of Bosch. And the main reason, Sarah, it's almost entirely due to your proselytizing on this podcast about Bosch. But this show is everything that I need from a summer show. It's like a cop thriller book, which, I mean, that's not a surprise. It's based on a series of cop thriller books. But, you know, it gives me everything I need. It gives me a loose cannon detective who plays by his own rules. He's told things like, you're off the case. He gets mad at uniform cops for trampling his crime scene. And he has to give up his badge and gun from time to time. So I started season two, and in the first episode, there's even a bit where you can tell it's a stunt double running in place of Titus Welliver. And that's not a knock on the show. I'm not looking for The Wire, you know, the Summer Wire. Those little bits actually make it more appealing to me. For my plug, I don't know that I have anything to plug TV related. I work for CBC here in Newfoundland, and I recently did an investigative piece that showed a change in government policy resulted in a spike in drivers getting dinged for having expired registration. So if that's your jam, you can find that. I'm very happy with that piece. That's all I got.
Put in a good word for fiddleheads.
That's a New Brunswick thing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, shit!
That might be my favorite thing that's happened on this podcast this year. Sarah D. Bunting.
I don't know how I could top that province clock, but I'll try. I am here to talk about a show that I'm sort of on, so clearly not going to top that moment. It's called Collateral. This is a proprietary to Netflix, I believe, four-parter from last year, which stars Carey Mulligan and the guy from White Dragon, known in my house as the poor man's Martin Freeman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Among others, as well as Nicola Watsitz, who is on all of these things. She had a recurring role in Scott and Bailey. She was the lead detective in Unforgotten. Collateral is fine. The problem is not really with Collateral. It's that we just finished Scott and Bailey, and nothing is going to show particularly well by comparison, although it does sort of have one thing in common with Scott and Bailey that I disliked about that show, which was sort of using a lead character's pregnancy as a larger comment on everything that is not like, I mean, Mulligan's character is like more pregnant than Rachel was, and I'm not anti-pregnant characters, and there are cop shows that have done this pretty well. Actually, Inspector Linley did this well. Cagney and Lacey was okay with it. Like, they're, you know, I just don't love it when a pregnant character's pregnancy is like a character beat and is doing a ton of work that, like, you know, you're a procedural. Proceed. Woman identified viewers who have seen or even heard of Prime Suspect don't necessarily need another underlined look at the horseshit women in the law enforcement workplace have to contend with. But so that's an issue. Another issue is that, you know, Carey Mulligan and Glaspie and her partner, D.I. Bilk, are the only characters who aren't nonstop off-putting. I know that the other people are mostly like bad guys, but like, be bad guys and not just like whiny dicks, all of you. And now that the bad guys sort of the outlines of what really happened, because this is sort of like a pizza delivery person gets shot, and then there's this very tangled web of people sort of, and he's at the center, but it's not even clear if he's the right guy. What?
The phrase, oh, what a tangled web we cheese, just came into my head.
It kind of is. Like, it's awfully sort of proud of all the capital I issues that are being brought up by this story. And, you know, it's not bad. It's pretty good. It's watchable. It's only 4 episodes. We're halfway through, so we're going to see it through because we're stubborn. But it could have been 3 episodes, and it could have not cast Nicola Walker as a sort of stammering mess. Like, maybe just let her be confident and content in what she's doing for once. She's a good actor. If anyone else has watched this and has comments, I would love to hear from you. This is one of those that Netflix popped up on the More Like This bar, and we stupidly believed them. But I would love to hear from anyone else who watched it. It's pretty good. It's just not great. And that is on Netflix. For my plug, I would like to note that my true crime newsletter with Eve Beatty, Best Evidence, which you can find at bestevidence.fyi, will be highlighting some materials this week about the Stonewall Uprising and related, including a book review from our very own Mark Blankenship on the website, which is the-blotter.com. So either bestevidence.fyi or the-blotter.com for a collection of Stonewall Uprising adjacent content and Mark's excellent book review of an excellent book. Woo.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate 3. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but if you have a show that is still using chloroform to knock out people, please reassess. I think it has become known to the general populace that chloroform doesn't work that way, that it takes minutes to knock somebody out with chloroform. Even if you have like a really soaked rag full of it, it just doesn't work that fast.
I didn't think I knew that. News you can use. Thanks, Dave.
Takes up to 5 minutes for the way they show it in movies for somebody to get knocked out with chloroform.
This is why your kidnappings never go that well, Sarah.
It really would explain a lot, but I've said too much.
I will say, in the past, like, you either chloroform somebody in pop culture or you knock them in the side of the head and they went unconscious. Also, usually doesn't work that way. Usually just hurt them a lot and they get back up, and either you kill them, give them brain damage, or maybe they went unconscious. In 2019, we have the solution. It is the taser. If you need to incapacitate somebody quickly and get on with it, it is the taser. So, show writers, if you are tempted to use chloroform in your show, consider the humble taser. Thank you.
We will not be linking to a taser in the show notes.
If you're interested in purchasing your own taser, email me, david@cole.fyi. I got some homemade stuff for you. It's real good. Oh boy, oh boy, that backwards theme means it is time for the Nonak, that is the evil goateed mirror twin of the canon. We're talking about a particularly terrible episode of an otherwise quality show, that is the Nonak. So submitting this week is our guest Dan. Take it away, Dan.
Hi. Well, the first couple times I was on this show, I submitted episodes of Canadian TV shows for the canon. Both are accepted, and I wanted to do the Canadian route this time, but I couldn't think of one in time.
Littlest Hobo.
So I went with something else. My wife and I, Alex Collins, friend of the show, we have a daughter who's nearly a teenager, and what's nice about that is that we're finally able to watch non-garbage television with her. Right? So we've been watching stuff like The Office and Arrested Development, and we also have been going back to the 80s for classics like Cheers and Golden Girls, and that's what brings us here today. So, you know, I probably don't have to explain Golden Girls to anybody to listening to this podcast. 4 single retirees living in Florida, Dorothy, Blanche, Rose, and Sophia. It was a critical and commercial hit in the 80s, and I think it's remarkable. I mean, I think it really says something about the show that nearly 35 years on after it debuted, the series about 4 seniors really resonates with our nearly 13-year-old daughter. She loves the show. She thinks it's fantastic.
But not every episode is a gem. And in our viewing, we recently came to the season two finale called Empty Nests. Now, when the episode opens, nothing seems amiss at first. The women are trading barbs in the kitchen. The dishwasher is on the fritz. And I don't buy that the women in Miami would let the dirty dishes pile up in the sink. I think they would wash them. But the point is that they're waiting for the repairman, whose name is Mr. Fix-It. And when the doorbell rings, they hope it's him. It's not. It's their friend named Renee, played by Rita Moreno. All of the Golden Girls know her, and apparently her doctor husband is their physician. Now, we've never seen or heard of Renee and George before. That's not unusual, because in the 80s, we still accepted that characters would pop in for an episode, act like they were part of the show's mythology the whole time, and then disappear, never to be seen again. Now, our heroes would teach them a lesson, or they'd teach our heroes a lesson, and then everything would reset the following week. So, what lesson are we going to learn this week? The episode title, Empty Nests, is a clue in our first clip.
Oh, hi, Rose.
Then you will talk to him tonight.
I will try.
Oh, Renee.
Dorothy, it's crazy, but I feel like how can I bother him? He's doing all this important stuff, saving lives. And I'm going to bother him because I'm a little unhappy.
Renee, Jenny just left for college. All your kids are gone. This is a perfectly legitimate problem.
It's the empty nest syndrome. When I had it, I didn't know what it was. I was just very depressed. By the time I figured out what it was, I was going to tell Charlie, but he died that night. I was so full of grief about Charlie, I forgot to be depressed about the empty nest.
That's the name of the episode.
Drink.
There's a little empty air at the end of that clip, and it's because Dorothy, B. Arthur, is staring at Rose with her trademark blend of contempt and confusion, disbelief. And I felt like this happened more than usual in this episode, where Dorothy didn't have a funny line as much as mugged for the camera. According to IMDb, the writer of the episode, Susan Harris, was ill and wasn't available for rewrites, and I think it shows. Anyway, Renee resolves to talk to George, but as she leaves, she sounds like she's wavering. So now that she's gone, it's time for another one of those patented Golden Girl situations, right? No, we instead go over to Renee's home. George is getting ready for work when somebody named Chuck shows up. And then Renee comes in, and expository dialogue lets us know that Chuck is Renee's brother, and he has multiple personality disorder. Now, things are already a little bit off, because this is a very rare scene for the Golden Girls in that not a single one of the Golden Girls is present for much of this scene. Anyway, back to Chuck. One of his personalities is Mr. Fix-It, the repairman that the girls are waiting for, and this is going to be played for laughs throughout the rest of the episode. So then Rose and Sophia show up because, you know, these are good friends who have definitely all been hanging out together for the past 2 years. Chuck then becomes Mr. Fix-It, which lets the girls exit, and then George winds up rushing off to work without coming to any kind of resolution with Renee about their marriage. Later, all the Golden Girls are hanging out at Renee's house, as they totally do all the time, when Renee and George's daughter Jenny shows up, unexpectedly home from college because she got dumped by her boyfriend. The girls all reminisce about their first loves, and then all exit as George comes home, so he can spend more time solely with his family that we've never seen before. And then another new character shows up, this one named Oliver, his entrance putting him squarely in the wacky neighbor category, just as Jenny agrees with her parents that she should go back to school in our next clip.
I'm going to go make a few phone calls. I'd like to see some friends before we go back tomorrow.
Where are you going?
Back to school.
Flying?
Yeah.
You'd be safer hitching.
Oliver, don't start.
Hey, I'm a test pilot. Who knows better than I what goes on up there?
Oliver, I don't need to hear this.
No, what you don't need to hear is what goes on in the cockpit.
Hey, come on.
Goodbye, Oliver.
Bye, Jen.
Now, as any Golden Girls fan can tell you, that's some classic Oliver. So Jenny's heading back to school, and an unhappy Renee is going with her to help her get settled, but she implies that she might not come back. So I'm going to gloss over much of the rest of the episode, because we do not see the Golden Girls again, except for a brief appearance by Dorothy, which is completely pointless, other than maybe preventing viewers from changing the channel in confusion and disgust. In the days before DVRs, if you happen to tune into this episode, it's conceivable you might have thought that the channel listings were messed up. So, after nearly a week on his own, George heads to New York and promises Renee that he will move his practice to their home and cut back on his patient load. So, yay, the marriage of George and Renee, I have to check my notes, Corliss, is saved.
And now they're going to have the honeymoon that they never really had. And that includes sex. Our final clip.
Oh, George, what a great 3 days. This has been a wonderful honeymoon.
It should be. You waited long enough.
You think we'll stay like this always?
I think eventually we'll have to go to the bathroom.
And you love me always?
Always.
Because I won't always look like this, you know.
Honey, you don't look like you did 10 years ago, but that hasn't mattered.
George, promise me you'll never get your teeth bonded and run around with stewardesses.
I promise.
You swear?
I swear.
I love you.
I love you too, sweetheart.
George. Promise me one more thing.
What?
Promise me you'll never die.
Say what?
What? So there we have it. Now, I think in the year 2019, we all know a lot more about the business of television than we did 3 decades ago. I think today a lot of TV fans know what a backdoor pilot is. I'm not sure how many did in the 80s. That's what this was. I'm not sure whether it matters whether people knew or not. I kept thinking of people at the time settling in to watch the season finale of a hit show being given over to an attempt to squeeze out a brand new show involving not even tertiary characters, but completely brand new characters. And not brand new actors. Paul Dooley, who plays George, had already appeared on the show midway through that season, playing a guy who dated Rose and whose name was
really
Isaac Q. Newton. And that's not something that a show would even try to get away with today. Audience reaction to this episode was apparently so terrible that while a spinoff called Empty Nest did result, it was about a doctor whose 2 adult daughters return home to live with him. He was played by Richard Mulligan, not Paul Dooley, and he was a widower. That's right. They killed off the Rita Moreno character. And because it was the 80s, the only actor from this backdoor pilot to make it to the Empty Nest series was the annoying neighbor played by David Leisure.
Joe Isuzu.
Would you say, when it came to the Empty Nest backdoor pilot, that they called a mulligan?
Get out, Dave.
Golf.
Anyway... According to IMDb, Rita Moreno said the cast was unfriendly towards her, and I'm not sure anybody can blame them. So, as you consider this for the Nonak, please think about this. This episode made light of mental illness, although I think it's fair to say it appears to be coming from a genuine attempt to treat the schizophrenic character with compassion, but it often veers into condescension. Also, this episode was so bad, it caused the death of national treasure and EGOT winner Rita Moreno. But most important, it sidelined the titular stars of the series for the bulk of the season finale. The edge possessed by at least 3 of the characters was ditched, so that resulted in uncut treacle, and the viewers were asked for a return on emotional investment in characters they'd never heard of 30 minutes previously. I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Dan. Sarah D. Bunting, you are our Golden Girl expert. Please start us off.
I would love to. Excellent presentation of an episode that, I don't think I ever watched this before, but everything about it is just a little bit off. I used to have a Tumblr called Fashions by Zbornak, where me and past guest John Ramos would just like do like clips of the show and see what Dorothy was wearing. And it's like, are the, you know, we'd run down a checklist. Like, is this present? Are these scrunchy boots in Miami in the summer present? Is this like Klingon shield of a blouse present? But it's always supposed to be in pastel colors. And in this episode, she's wearing like maroon. It's like, so even the Dorothy outfits are like not quite right. This is just bad. I actually felt upset, like angry on behalf of Rita Moreno and Paul Dooley, who deserved better than this. And the actual Golden Girls, the dialogue is not as good as usual. That, like, we get it. Rose is a idiot for Minnesota. Like, even that stuff wasn't working. They weren't jumping each other's lines. There's like a scene where there's a Chautauqua about Renee's marriage and like expositioning about empty nest syndrome. Like, it's a PSA. Like, oh, it's just so obviously a backdoor pilot. And then on top of that, they name one of the characters Oliver. Like, way to believe in your own premise there, backdoor show. I did a little Googling around, and in the various lists online that rank all of the Golden Girls episodes, this is almost uniformly last. And the ones that don't put it last, it's only because clip shows are behind it. So yeah, like, here's the Joe Isuzu guy to be the Kramer. Hardest of passes. And it is shocking to me that this was a season finale. Shocking.
It wasn't buried in over the summer. It wasn't, you know, one of two episodes shown on a single night or anything. It was the final episode of the season.
Also, yeah, that the creator did this to her own show.
Yeah.
Susan Harris is the show creator, according to the credits. So
that's right. Mm-hmm.
Brutal. Yeah. So this is terrible. And I think that certainly, you know, we don't always agree on the criteria for the no-nack, or I think amongst each of us, the criteria are sometimes...
I generally don't agree with you at all, Sarah. So
yeah, it's true. But this is a very good show, like universally agreed upon. Sure. Great show. And this is a disastrous episode and possibly the worst, which I think is David T. Cole's criterion. Mm-hmm. For electing it. So yeah, I can't say that I'm happy to have seen this, but I am happy to know where it is in the episode order, so that if I'm doing a marathon of the show, I can jump over it. Sorry that your daughter wasn't so lucky.
I was really sorry that I had to do this to you too, Sarah. Yeah,
you should be. Tara.
Just a little more data about the Empty Nests versus Empty Nest, the show that eventually was. It's not like they redid, like, the Richard Mulligan character has a different name. The daughters are different. Like, it's not like they just transplanted this original premise and killed off Rita Moreno. Like, the mom is never in the picture, as you said. But also, the one thing they did keep, other than that both of the guys are doctors, is they used the same set. The set of the house is the same.
Oh, wow.
Which is real weird. And David Leisure, except he has the same last name but different first name in the actual series. He's not Oliver anymore. He's Charlie. Like, why? And also, just a side note from our own household, later the same day that we watched this episode, we watched the Jean-Claude Van Damme and Jean-Claude Van Damme vehicle Double Impact. And Jeffrey Lewis, who plays Chuck, is also in that movie as like a former, like a Vietnam veteran security specialist who like runs all this stuff. And it was very weird to see him playing Chuck / Mr. Fix-It and then playing that very capable guy who was like pulling all the ridiculous stunts in this movie. Very silly, also wearing a bad wig. Anyway, yeah, this is terrible. Like, what else is there to say, really? It's a dumb idea. You're right. It would be bewildering if you just happened upon it, because that has happened to me. I actually have stumbled upon this one when I've had, like, Golden Girls on in the middle of the night, you know, to try and fall asleep, and been extremely confused about what the hell is going on with all of this. You're so right that Rita Moreno and Paul Dooley deserve better. David Leisure, whatever. But I mean,
he deserved exactly what he got.
Yeah, pretty yeah. much.
The one plot point I'll note is like, what it just to underline how ill-conceived this whole thing was. So Renee comes home. She knows her brother's there. He goes upstairs to do whatever. And then she's like, well, my brother's here. Let's sit down and have this extremely serious conversation about our marriage in the 2 minutes before he comes back. Like, no one would do this. I know it's a sitcom, but this is not how people act. Like,
I had a note about that, too. That Paul Dooley, whatever his name is, George Dooley, is like, that she's like, I need to talk to you about our marriage, which I'm not happy in. And he's like, what are you talking about? It's fine. Well, gotta go. Like,
yeah,
that just doesn't.
It was not at all clear whether this was from his reaction. It was not at all clear whether this is the first time that she's brought up, you know, that you wanted to talk about their marriage, or the umpteenth time. Can't tell.
Right. Yeah. It's all very strange. And like, "Promise me you'll never die" as the very last line to appear in the in Golden Girls season 2. Like, what was anyone thinking?
Also, is she 4 years old?
Insane. So yeah, excellent choice, obviously. I won't say thank you, but you make an excellent point. Dave.
Okay, so this is an absolute garbage 22 minutes of television. I think we can all agree.
24 and a half.
But this is like, as a backdoor pilot, this is less like a knock and a visit on the back door than it is like the club tracking shot from Goodfellas. Like, it spent so much time away from the Golden Girls. Like, it is amazing. Like, it's got to be 70% non-Golden Girls, 30% with the Golden Girls. It is amazing how completely they forget that this was an actual episode of a show called The Golden Girls by the end of this episode, by the halfway mark of this episode, frankly. But here's the controversial take I have on it, guys.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
I will save my no-knack vote for an episode of The Golden Girls that is actually a shitty episode of The Golden Girls.
Oh, for God's sake,
and not
Dave.
A terrible show that tried to slipstream into the schedule behind The Golden Girls. Frankly, I don't even think this could be considered an episode of The Golden Girls. Like, this is just a terrible decision by the creator, by the network, to really take advantage of a relatively new show's rise to fame. And it is a bad episode, yes, but I feel like for the no knack, what I want is a really shitty episode of the Golden Girls in an episode of the Golden Girls, not just when they take one product and put another brand's product on it. Like, it's an Oreo milkshake. Like, are we to blame Oreo for this, or do we blame the milkshake people for this? I'm going to say we blame the milkshake people for this.
I can't believe you want to elect things into the no-knack. Overwhelming positivity. Like, I just feel like you always have some reason where you're like, look, this doesn't qualify. Like,
oh, I'm just saying that if I'm going to vote for the worst episode of the series, I kind of want it to be
this one.
All the signifiers of a Golden Girls episode poorly done, not another show that has been crammed in between the opening credits and the closing credits of the Golden Girls that is ill-considered and ill-conceived. I'm not arguing it's shitty.
I am just saying
that I want to really stick it to the Golden Girls proper in the future.
I don't think we really need to quibble with Dave's semantics, because I have a feeling how this is going to end. So,
all right. So let's put it to the vote then. Sarah D. Bunting, is this no knack worthy, yes or no?
Because even the Golden Girls-y parts sucked? Yes, it is. No knack.
Tara Ariano.
Yes, of course, it's no knack.
It is, in fact, not no knack, but guess what, guys? It doesn't matter, because 2-1. Okay, that means the Golden Girls season 2, episode 26, the season finale, Empty Nests, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great No Knack.
I never doubted it.
Thank you for letting us have that. Oh, God.
Americans love a winner. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has the winner.
Before I get to that, I just want to say what I was struck by this time listening to the Nonak success theme is like before the final push up, like the way you can feel the musicians like holding back. They know that high screamy note is coming. Even they dread it like we do. Anyway, winner of the week is Michael Sheen, star of Amazon's Good Omens, because someone who follows him on Twitter wrote, added him, "For the love of all that is holy, please quit catering to the 12-year-olds who comprise the fanfic universe. Can nothing be allowed to be clever adult entertainment? The Good Omens news on the interweb today is all about you and how you are courting that group." Which, first of all, okay, we get you're not 12, because if you're still saying interweb in 2019, you're 500 years old. But Michael Sheen responded by saying, "I will unashamedly and unapologetically celebrate the joy and the warmth and the creativity of a community of people sharing something positive and beautiful and connective. And if you don't like it, you are most welcome to very fuck off." And I support him.
Wow.
I've certainly mocked fanfic people before, too. But like, this is really what you want to get mad at this point in like all of our lives and history. Like, let fanfic people have their thing. And if the star of their show is boosting their fan art, be happy for them. That's awesome of him. And so good for him and good for them.
And Sarah has the loser.
Charter Communications has been invited by five female New York One anchors to fuck off.
Very fuck off.
Yeah, to very fuck off. Rightly, anchors Roma Torre, Kristen Shaughnessy, Janine Ramirez, Vivian Lee, and Amanda Farinacci noted in a statement, "Women on TV should accurately reflect women in society and be celebrated at every age, not treated like decoration that can be disposed and replaced with a newer version." They are accusing the network of repeatedly marginalizing and relegating to second-class status women anchors over 40, and the lawsuit or comments about the lawsuit and some of the coverage locally noted. And I love Pat Kiernan, but this is absolutely true that like the branding of Pat Kiernan, New York's, you know, cozy official anchor of everything, like he really is that and he's great. But I remember Roma Torre and Kristen Shaughnessy in particular as having been already here on my TV in New York when I moved here in 95. And good for them. Good luck. And I think actually my man Pat Kiernan needs to, if he is allowed to by deposition rules or whatever, get behind their shit and push and be
Hell
a good
yeah.
ally.
Speaking about getting behind shit and pushing, do you know what time it is?
You're welcome. It's game time.
All right, everybody. This is the 10th game time of the season. Season scores are Tara 4, Sarah 3, Value Guest 2. Today we are playing Chums and Helpers from the crew at EHGAssist on Twitter. Today's game will test your knowledge of TV sidekicks. I'll read you up to three clues to the sidekick's identity. If you guess it after the first clue, you get 3 points. After the second clue, 2 points. And after the final clue, 1 point. You can guess after each clue. Tara, steel meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. I have 6 steel meals. Valued guests have 2 steel meals. Sarah has no steel meals but an extravaganza gong, as we were reminded last week.
Ooh,
Danny,
yeah.
I want to tell you, if you choose to use your steel meal, you know how to do it. You shout it out, but be very aggressive so that Dave doesn't move on and give the answer before you can attempt to steal.
Right. I have a question. Do the steel meals reset at the end of the season?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. It's up to me.
Okay.
Assume they do, I would say.
They're your steel meals today, so.
Right. I guess I just, you know.
He's very Canadian and polite. He doesn't want to spend other people's money.
Well, Cat Angus is Canadian, too. She didn't have a problem with it. Hey, Cat.
Just throw him away willy-nilly. Buzz, steel meal. I don't know. That was her. So to remind you, a win today means Tara could take the season. Sarah, as Tara mentioned, you still have an extravaganza gong you may use. No one knows what it does. Its properties are always in flux. It could be something of great benefit, or it could be the worst thing that's ever happened to you. Sarah D. Bunting, This is the only moment this week you can use your extravaganza gong. Do you wish to initiate the extravaganza gong?
Yes, I do.
Sarah D. Bunting, you now have your choice of one of these three things.
Oh, no.
Choice number A, starting Dan and Tara with negative 2 points each.
Me? What? Me too?
Number B, give yourself 5 steel meals that expire today. Or option C, join powers with a Dan in a winner-takes-all Tara versus the world match to decide the season with today's game.
Dang.
Wow.
Those are three good options.
Start your opponents with negative 2 points. Give yourself 5 steel meals, which must be used today.
Okay.
Join powers with Dan in a winner takes all Tara versus the world season grudge match.
I mean, although I have had good luck allying with Dan's in the past, I don't necessarily wish to cross my spouse, and steel meals I've been getting by okay, so I'm gonna start the other two with negative dos, por favor.
Tara and Dan starting today's game with negative 2 points each. Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Dan is first, followed by Tara, then followed by Sarah D. Bunting, 2 points ahead of everybody else before we even start. Yeah. Are we ready to play Chums and Helpers?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yep. Here we go. Dan, reminding you, you can answer after each clue, but let's keep it tight.
Okay.
Clue number one. Used to be black.
Oh, that's it?
Clue number two. Responsible for moistening the eyeballs of his employer.
Smithers on The Simpsons.
Smithers, good for 2 points, putting you to zero.
0 points. Oh, I'm not quite good enough for Final Jeopardy yet, but...
Tara Ariano?
Yep.
Going to build his own theme park.
Bender.
It's good for 3 points with blackjack and hookers. In fact, forget the park. Sarah D. Bunting, your first clue for 3 points. Briefly a member of the Frozen Embryos.
Actually, we're between names. All right, between names. I believe this is Rayanne Graff.
You are correct. That is 3 points for you. Back to Dan. Furiosity. Furiosity.
Furiosity? Next clue.
Boobs in California.
Still don't know.
Pinot Noir.
Pass.
The answer there. Anybody else?
It's Titus, right?
Titus from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. The songs he sang. Tara. Sidekick clue number one. Called the human laugh track.
Okay.
Spent 12 years searching the stars.
Mm-mm.
Hi-yo.
I don't think he can steal me at this stage, or do I get all my clues?
Nope. He can't. Dan doesn't know how it works.
No. All right.
He can only steal after an incorrect answer has been given.
But that's only worth 1 point, right?
Well, she hasn't incorrectly answered it yet, so you can't do anything right now.
I also haven't heard it, because...
Okay, your third hint is hi-yo. Called the human laugh track, spent 12 years searching the stars. Hi-yo, your answer?
Ed McMahon?
Correct. 1 point. 1 point for Ed McMahon. Sarah D. Bunting. Oh, I haven't been attributing these. I'm very sorry. I start that now. Emily says, matching white suit.
Matching white suit?
Yes.
If I answer correct, I forgot to ask this. I'm sorry. If I answer incorrectly, do I get to keep going?
Yes.
Tubbs.
My little friend.
Next.
Is very excited about incoming planes.
Oh, my God. I know the actor's name. Tattoo?
Tattoo from Fantasy Island, 1 point. Back to Dan. This is from Joe in London. Known for making an entrance. Known for making an entrance. Kramer. Good guess.
Wow.
You're my new best friend. Call me every 5 minutes. Next clue. Stage shows include Just Jack and Jack 2000.
Jack from Will and Grace.
Jack from Will and Grace. We'll accept that. To Tara. This is from Ryan in L.A. Changed his original last name, Dalaopoulos, because he couldn't spell it.
Okay, go on.
A used carman by trade, he often lies about his job, once saying he was Playboy's best photographer to impress girls. Number one, do you remember Playboy? Number two, do you remember photographers?
Yeah, okay.
Keep Third moving. Hint, lives upstairs from his best friend, Jack.
Oh, Larry.
Larry from Three's Company is correct. Larry Dallas. Larry Dallas.
Sure.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
This is from Josh Lemmer. Outspoken fans ask for this nerd girl sidekick to become the hero's main love interest.
Next.
Accidentally nuked an entire town once.
Next.
Other fans that don't ship her with the hero would say that you have failed this show.
I don't know. Benson.
That was Felicity from Arrow.
Oh my gosh, I was thinking of answering that. Oh, all right.
Back to Dan, also from Josh. In a crossover episode, the actor refused to have his character lose a fight to the much more well-known sidekick from the other show.
Don't know.
Actor has been seen fighting Chuck Norris and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kato.
Kato is correct from the Green Hornet for 2 points.
Nice.
Well done. Tara, Joe in London gives you this hint. Maybe her dream won't poop on her face.
Oh, Paula Proctor from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
That's a 3-pointer. Well done. Back to Sarah D. Bunting from Lauren in D.C. This sidekick served time for misappropriation of funds.
Next.
Keeper of the bag.
Shit. What is his name? It's Tony Hale. That guy from Veep with the glasses. Next.
Described by a senator as a 12-year-old boy trapped in the body of a 12-year-old girl.
I don't know his name.
Yeah, you're on the right track, for though.
You. Yeah.
That character's name, Gary Walsh.
Gary! Yeah.
Back to Dan. From yours truly, your first clue, bears.
Dwight Schrute.
Beats Battlestar Galactica. Well done. Tara.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First clue, Cubs fan. Cubs fan.
I don't know.
Clue number two, can successfully pull off a soul patch.
It's not Chandler Bing. I don't know.
Clue three, one of the few CTU employees that was never a mole.
I know this isn't right, but I'm still going to say it. Chloe?
Steel Mule. She could pull off a soul patch.
Dan has a called Steel Mule.
Dan, what is the answer?
Tony Almeida.
You are correct. And hey. Dan gets one additional point.
Nice.
Sarah D. Bunting, Joe in London wants to hear this clue. Used to dress like the softer side of Sears.
Willow Rosenberg.
You are correct. That's a 3-pointer. Second clue, board now. Dan, Lauren in DC again. This sidekick, local theater star. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. You have more information in the first clue. Local theater star, that was Sally in Cabaret. All right, clue Moira. Number two.
Hang on, Moira Rose.
Good guess.
Clue number two, business partner of Johnny and best friend to David.
Yes. What's her name? Damn it.
Talk it out. What do you know about this?
This is Schitt's Creek.
Hmm.
Could this be. Is the Canadian TV show that I thought about submitting for the canon. She runs the motel. She's got, I feel like she's got a boy's name.
All right. You want that third clue or are you going to?
Might
I'm
going to
give you a third clue because otherwise I'm going to buzz you. So here's your third clue. And it is something I think you already know. Owns the Rosebud Motel.
Frankie.
Yeah, you're on the right track. Stevie.
Stevie. Oh.
All right. This is question 17.
It's pretty
cool.
And it is for Tara from Dave in Chicago. Dedicated hairdresser to one particular client.
Mickey from The Comeback.
Wow. Nicely done. 3 points. Mickey Dean from The Comeback. All right. This is the last question before our first score break for Sarah D. Bunting. Also from Dave in Chicago. Somewhat estranged from her protagonist friend, but remains loyal.
Next.
Christian Mathelete.
Millie.
Yeah!
Wow. Oh my god, I don't know where that came
Millie
from.
Millie nice Kentner pull. From Freaks Dang. And Geeks. Well done. Last clue was she knows what high people look like. She went to a Seals and Croft concert last summer. Tara scores.
Very, very close game. Dan has 7 points. Sarah and I are tied with 9 points each.
All right. Still plenty of game left. This is question for Dan. First clue. Co-investor in Entertainment 720.
Next.
Co-investor in the Snake Hole Lounge.
I don't know. Next.
He is the worst.
Yeah, it's not coming to me. It's
Tara knows.
Yeah, that's John Ralphio.
John Ralphio from Parks and Rec. Correct.
Right.
All right, Tara. Joe in London again.
Mm-hmm.
Bad Wolf.
Proceed.
Dated a part human, part Time Lord.
Rose?
Yay! That was the 9th and 10th Doctor's companions, Rose Tyler, Doctor Who.
All right.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, Emily, again, this is a quote. Brilliant and kind and stupid hot. Brilliant and kind and stupid hot.
Paris.
Incorrect. Second clue. Favorite song is Time After Time.
Pete from Benson.
Third clue. Nurse who worked in a government building for some reason.
Nurse who worked in
Brilliant
a government
Brilliant and kind
building?
And stupid hot. Favorite song, Time After Time. Nurse who worked in a government building for some reason.
Anne.
And from Parks and Rec, good for 1 point. Nicely done.
Nice. All right, so now we know shows are in here more than once. Good to know.
Yeah.
And speaking about more than once, Josh is back. Your clue, Dan. Piano cover of Paint It Black.
Next.
Epic speech was interrupted by a drunk park goer shooting him in the head.
Jesus.
Next.
Did not get along with his doppelganger from Shogun World.
No idea.
Yeah. That's Hector from Westworld. Hector. That was a tough one if you didn't watch. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
From Chris Billig. Played by an actor with an apt surname.
Jeff Actor.
Former Flying Grayson.
Nope.
Holy third hint, Batman.
Oh.
Robin. That's Robin.
I'm sure she gets Robin.
Yeah, for 1 point.
Robin.
That's the way picky rolls, Mr. McEachern. All right, Josh again for Sarah.
Yeah.
In season 5, we find out that his real name is Sal.
Blowfish.
Had a storyline that was basically product placement for a real life tequila brand.
Blowfish. I don't know.
Still incorrect. That's a sign of insanity. Somehow, yep. Even more useless than Johnny Drama.
Turtle?
You were in the ballpark with Blowfish.
I was trying not to laugh when he said Blowfish. Yeah. That's Turtle from Entourage. Okay. Dan. Another one from Josh. Josh is all over this game.
Come on, Josh.
Is much more competent than her bumbling uncle.
Penny.
Nice. Tiger Gadget. Ooh. Boom. 3 points.
Thanks, Josh.
Tara.
Yes.
First clue. Not a girl. Narrows it down.
Gilbert Blythe.
Has excellent taste in vests.
This is Chandler Bing. Shit.
Oh.
Although this applies to Chandler Bing as well, Chandler Bing is not the answer. Your third clue. Okay. Also not a robot.
Oh, Janet.
Janet from The Good Place.
From The Good Correct. Place.
1 point. Emily's back for Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay.
First clue. This sidekick dislikes unauthorized cinnamon.
Unauthorized cinnamon. Yes. Joe.
This sidekick is helpful when passing a gleet.
I don't know.
Third clue. Will pop your eye out if provoked in the thoroughfare.
Yeah, I will.
Oh, dear.
Swedgen?
Close. That's Swedgen psychic Dan Doherty.
Oh, Dan.
All right, here we are for Dan. Other Dan, who does not poke people's eyes out.
As far as you know.
Yeah, I mean, after that fiddlehead comment with New Brunswick, who knows? Yeah. I thought I knew him, but I don't.
You know, Canadian. Violent.
Dan McEachern, leader of the world's most dangerous band.
Paul Schaefer.
That's 3 points.
Wow.
Nice. Wow.
Emily's back for Tara.
Yep.
Married to Fred.
Ethel?
Yes. Ethel Mertz from I Love Lucy lives across the hall. Wow, that's impressive. I thought we were going to get you up with the Flintstones there, but... you saw right around Emily's little ruse. Sarah D. Bunting, Josh again. This is a quote. What are we going to do tonight?
Next.
Narf.
I'm sorry, what?
Narf.
Narf.
N-A-R-F, narf. Not narm. Narf.
I know. I was like, please let it be narf.
That's when a dog has a stroke and dies. Numb. Narf. Narf.
Next, please.
Sings songs about cheese while his partner tries to take over the world. Songs about cheese. What are we going to do tonight? Narf. sings songs about cheese while his partner tries to take over the world.
Oh, I'm going to be so mad, but I don't know.
The answer we were looking for was Pinky from Animaniacs and eventually from Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that, so I'm not that mad.
Dan, again from Josh.
Okay, Josh.
Thinks he should be in charge of the evil organization he's the number two for.
Next.
One time he turned into a wasp, but most of the time he turns into a jet.
Starscream.
Starscream from Transformers is correct. I love Starscream. Such a little shit.
Yeah.
From Lauren in DC. Mm-hmm. Died in a botched robbery.
Don't know. Keep going.
Part of a 60-person dance crew. Oh.
Jason. Jason Mendoza.
Jason Mendoza from The Good Place is correct. This is Sarah D. Bunting's last question before the score break. Sarah. This sidekick has had the same job since 1982.
Cliff Clavin.
Good guess.
Recognized in the 1992 Guinness Book of World Records as television's most frequent clapper.
Vanna White.
Yeah!
2 points. Nicely done. All right, now awesome. It is time for our score break.
Well, still very close. Sarah has 13 points. Dan has 15 points. I have 18 points.
All right, everybody's got 3 questions left, 9 possible points. Let's get back to it. Dan, Dave in Chicago is providing your clues. We never met her husband.
Karen.
Regularly feuded with 2 other sidekicks on the same series. This series chock full of sidekicks.
Don't know.
Third clue. Passive aggressive nosy landlady. So we never met her husband. This person regularly feuded with 2 other sidekicks on the same series and was a passive-aggressive, nosy landlady.
Sherlock Holmes's landlady.
Incorrect. The answer from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, it was Phyllis. Phyllis.
Oh, okay. All right.
Tara from Chris Billig, allegedly called a big fat dildo by Warren Littlefield.
George Costanza.
Left a show to control the universe.
Andy Richter.
Andy Richter, correct. For 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting. Josh is back. It's Not Unusual, the song.
Next.
Sued Fortnite makers. I mean, the actor did, but we're looking for the psych.
Yeah. This was in Winners and Losers not that long ago.
It's Not Unusual. Actor sued Fortnite.
I still don't know. Next.
Bought a gun in a very special episode.
Bought a gun? I mean, I don't know.
The answer was Carlton Banks from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, all right. Oh, all right. Yeah. Oh.
All right, Josh is back yet again for Dan. Was once told that he wants a nice girl but needs the bad pussy.
Oh, this is certainly not something I would watch. Don't know.
Successfully won a trial by combat.
No idea.
Last clue. Finally got his castle after threatening people with a crossbow.
Is this a Game of Thrones thing? I don't know.
I mean, you're right. It was a Game of Thrones thing. The answer we're looking for was Bronn with two N's. The extra N is for extra castle. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
This is from me. And, Picky is liking you, I think. Makes a mean turnip surprise.
Baldrick.
Baldrick from Blackadder. Son of a pig farmer and bearded lady. And, of course, has a cunning plan. Sarah D. Bunting, Josh again. Once locked up the entire town for minor infractions.
Barney Fife.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
And his sidekick, Clem Cadiddlehopper.
With apologies to Josh, I replaced his second clue because it is the same character. Was witness to Charles Bronson's intentions to go down to Emmett's Fix-It Shop to fix Emmett.
Fix Emmett.
All right, everybody's last question coming at you, so let's quickly get the scores, please, Char.
Okay. Danny has 15 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 16 points. I have 23 points.
Okay, sounds like it's all wrapped up, but let's play it through. Who knows? That might be some sort of crazy multiplier. Anything can happen with the extravaganza gong in play. Dan.
Really?
No, not really. Tried to fake his own death and got caught. Tried to fake his own death and got caught.
next clue.
Was almost an Olympic archer.
Crap, this is sounding familiar now. Don't know.
Donuts in bed? What are you depressed about or celebrating?
It's over. What is it?
Tara?
That's Pete Hornberger from 30 Rock.
Indeed it is. All right, last question for Tara. Ryan in LA wants to know if you can identify a psychic from this clue. Wears a bow tie and nothing else. It's not me.
Boo-boo?
It is boo-boo, yeah.
Good job.
Nicely done. 3 points. All right, last question of the regulation game, of course, has to be from Josh, and it is for Sarah. This sidekick once famously promoted Winston cigarettes.
Serena Sutherland.
Why can't he just go to the store and buy his own cereal?
Buy his own cereal? I don't know. Sam the Butcher.
What's worse, being portrayed by Rick Moranis or Stephen Baldwin?
I don't know.
The answer we were looking for? Anybody?
Barney Rubble.
Barney Rubble, yes. Barney Rubble. Stones. All right, that is the end of regulation. Tara Ariano, our final scores.
Danny finished with 15 points. Sarah with 16 points. I had 26 points.
Tara!
10-point split. All right, here is our last question. It is a tiebreaker. It is also worth 9 points. Here we go. The first 5 Ks of his name are silent. He's not from Wisconsin.
Dave from News Radio. No, he's not a psychic.
His nickname is an initialism reflecting his official status at the high school he attends. The first 5 Ks of his name are silent. He is not from Wisconsin. His nickname is an initialism reflecting his official status at the high school he attends. That he attends with all the other people in this ensemble cast sitcom set in the past.
What?
No idea. Nobody got that one. Now we're looking for Fez, foreign exchange student from That 70s Show. But Tara, you won today.
Tara!
And Tara. History repeats
itself. Try and use it. Congratulations, Tara.
You're best around. Never know when you're something, something. You're the best.
All Well done, Tara. And I'm so happy we got to use the Extravaganza Gong before the season played out. Because as we all know the rules of Extravaganza Gong, the Extravaganza Gong always expires at the end of the season.
Yes.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Grade. We sharpened our tiny little pencils to give summertime scores to ABC's mini golf competition show, Holy Moly, before going around the dial with stops at Years and Years, Lethal Weapon, Animal Kingdom, Bosch, Collateral, and a crackpot theory about the use of chloroform on TV. Danny thought the empty nest backdoor pilot shoehorned into the Golden Girls was no neck worthy, and our Golden Girls agreed. We crowned winners and losers of the winners and losers of the week.
Got it.
And Tara was the winner of this week's Sidekick Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara, Old Lady Ariano,
I'm going to very fuck off.
And Sarah D. for Decrepit Bunting.
I'm the Sid Vicious of Game Time.
And youthful Dan McEachern.
That's a New Brunswick thing.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here in 2 weeks on Extra Hot Grade.
This for the win.
Oh, he missed as well.
Fart.
Thank you, Dave. All is forgiven.
I believe he said fart. Oh, that's too good.
Dave, never disappoints, really.
Did everybody hear him?
I heard it.
That's fantastic.